Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online at wdiy.org. And for those listeners who are members of WDIY, I want to remind everyone that we are celebrating WDIY's 20th anniversary, and we are having a member appreciation night on Saturday, February 7th. So I'm going to try to make it to that event as well. So I hope if we have some members listening who plan to attend, I'd love to meet you. So please come up and say hello. Today's January 21st, 2015. Time is going so fast. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 17,554, the NASDAQ at 4667, and the S&P at 2032. Last week, I had Attorney Charles Stopp of Steckel & Stopp Law Office, who joined us to talk about Pennsylvania inheritance tax and how it affects agribusiness owners and the taxation of farmland and the family farm. I want to thank him for being here. He did a great job. Tonight, I'm talking about getting ready for tax season. I can't believe it's here already. So yes, we are getting ready for tax season. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Judy Ann is in the studio with us this evening and will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I will do my best to answer your questions. I also want to remind folks, if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can always call in and give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down, bring it into the studio, and I will answer it. You could also send questions through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. For calls tonight, the number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So, what we are talking about is getting ready for tax season. So that, for me, is a whirlwind and very intense and a little bit stressful, but I certainly hope it's not going to be stressful for you. And hopefully we can talk through a few ideas of getting ready to make it less stressful for you. It should not be stressful. I tell people don't worry about things until you have to worry. And if you do have concerns about your tax return, whether you're going to owe or not, usually it's people who think they're going to owe who get the most stressed. Why not commit to preparing your tax return early so that you can have still a couple months to get ready to make that payment if you do, in fact, think you owe? So why put it off? You could prepare your return. You have an idea of what the numbers are by January 31st, and you have until April 15th to pay the money. For those folks who think they may get a refund, you certainly want to jump on that as soon as possible. Get your tax return prepared as soon as all your information is available, and get your return prepared because you may have some options of what to do with that refund that might even help your bottom line tax return even more than what you thought. So I'll try to go over some of those items tonight. So the framework for tonight's discussion is I'm going to talk about what kinds of tax forms you're going to be waiting for in the mail and a little bit about what they mean so that you have an understanding. And then I also want to talk about some of the information you need for preparing your tax return that you do not have to wait for, that is not coming in the mail, that is not reported to the IRS, but might have to do more with deductions for you. So I want to talk about some of the non-tax information that you need to gather and put together so that you can file the most accurate return that you can and be entitled to deductions that you you would otherwise, you know, that you're entitled to. All right. And then I also want to talk about some changes that may affect your tax filing, and then round out the bottom of the hour talking about the end of the hour talking about filing your tax return and your options there as well. Paper filing, electronic filing, doing it yourself, free filing, and having a tax preparer file for you. Okay. So the number to call this evening, if you have questions, is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So let's talk about getting organized. The probably best place for you to start is to pull out your last year's tax return to have that handy. That will serve as your benchmark. So you pull out your prior year's tax return and you start noticing things on the return. Let's start with, I'm going to talk about filing status a little bit later. So let's talk about the income that we see on page one of the return. The first line is your wages. And your wages are typically reported on a W-2. The W-2 is supplied by your employer. There's lots of valuable information on that W-2. So you want to make sure, especially if you're self-preparing your return, that you understand all of that information and how that might impact reporting on your tax return. So let me just go over a few items on your W-2 that you need to pay attention to. There are so many different boxes. You're going to see federal wages. You're going to see Medicare wages, Social Security wages. You're going to see state wages, local wages. This is for folks in Pennsylvania in particular. And we have people who are residents of Pennsylvania but work in New Jersey. And we have people who work in New Jersey residents who work in Pennsylvania and vice versa. So there's certain implications of those kinds of situations. It's a little bit more complicated, so I'm going to probably stick more to Pennsylvania tonight. But if folks have questions about New Jersey, I can cover those as well. So the reason it's interesting to look at your W-2, and I don't have one in front of me. I should have pulled one out, so I'm going off the top of my head. The federal wages and your Medicare wages aren't always the same number because there are certain things that the IRS allows us to not pay income tax on. And that is, for example, a 401k contribution. So if you're putting money in a 401k, you don't pay tax on that for federal purposes if you're doing a pre-tax contribution to that 401k. Some folks have Roth 401ks, so your employer might allow a Roth contribution, and that is on an after-tax basis. So if pretend you have wages of $100,000 and you have a $10,000 401k contribution, what would happen on your W-2 is your federal wages are going to be $90,000. Your Medicare wages and Social Security wages would be $100,000. But for Pennsylvania purposes, they don't give us that deduction for the 401k. So for Pennsylvania purposes, our state wages are going to be $100,000. Now, a little trick to check to see if your employer has reported your W-2 correctly or to check that you have reported your income on your tax return properly. And this is especially important for people who have out-of-state employers, is typically for Pennsylvania, your Medicare box is typically going to be very close to your state wage box. So if you see a big discrepancy, we need to resolve that. So we're going to talk about a few more things on your W-2 when we come back from our break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets, on the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Join us for WDIY's Member Appreciation Night on Saturday, February 7th from 7 to 11 p.m. at the Flatiron Building in South Bethlehem. Celebrate WDIY's 20th anniversary with music from the PA Jazz Collective and Mike Mattaglia and Midnight Shift. Tickets are $10 and only open to WDIY members. For tickets and information, call 610-694-8100, extension 4.
And welcome back to the show. That was Allison, our Allison Del Rey, and she sounded great. Again, talking about our Member Appreciation Night. Folks, you're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. We're talking about getting ready for tax season and how to get organized and what you need to pay attention to. And I was trying to quickly go through some of the tax forms and some of the information that's really important for you to watch for when you're preparing your tax return and how to get organized. First, let me start by saying that many of the tax forms that you receive, you're going to get in the mail from your employer, from your bank, from your brokerage firm, from your custodian or trustee of your IRA or your retirement plan. Any tax forms that you're getting in the mail, it's required by law that on the outside of that envelope, it will say important tax information enclosed. So if you receive envelopes in the mail that say important tax information enclosed, that is definitely an envelope that you need to keep open and stick in your tax file. So you collect those over the next couple of weeks as they're coming in, and then organizing yourself, getting ready to prepare your tax return, I want to go over a few of the things to pay attention to. So a W-2, you want to pay attention to the differences in the boxes and how they're reporting your income. So we have federal wages, Medicare wages, and state wages. And the differences you see in those boxes are typically for things like 401k contributions and maybe health care deductions. That's not subject to income tax or Medicare tax, but they do report those amounts on those W-2s now. So you're going to see different codes like in section 12 of the W-2, and the codes like D indicate like 401k. DD indicates the cost of the employer-sponsored health coverage. So different codes, E is 403b, so for all of our healthcare workers out there, it just kind of gives you an idea of why there's differences in the different types of wages. And then again, for folks who especially might have New Jersey employers or out-of-state employers who may not be familiar with Pennsylvania tax reporting, they may be reporting the state wages incorrectly. That does not mean you're not responsible for the proper reporting. So a little test or quick check on that would be looking at the Medicare wage to see if that's close to what your Pennsylvania wages are. Pennsylvania does give us a couple other little deductions that the Fed might not. So there are some other nuances. I'm not going to get into that right now, but that's just the quick check to kind of see if you're in the right ballpark. So W-2s. The other thing on the W-2 that you want to pay attention to is you will have a Pennsylvania unemployment insurance that you're paying now, which we didn't have many years ago. That's a deduction on Schedule A if you itemize. And also the local services tax or emergency municipal services tax has had many names over the past several years. Those are deductions on Schedule A if you itemize. And quite often I see where people might miss those. So in particular, the Pennsylvania unemployment compensation could be an extra little deduction for you. The other kinds of tax forms we see that flow through to page one of the return are interest, 1099 INT. That's the document you're going to watch for interest. And what you want to pay attention to there, there are several different boxes on a 1099 INT, and it might be regular interest. There's tax-exempt interest. Maybe you have a Pennsylvania municipal bond that might be reported on a statement, a 1099 INT. Or you just might have tax-exempt interest from other municipal bonds that aren't Pennsylvania. So you have to be careful when you're reporting that information for federal. Municipal bonds are tax-exempt for federal purposes, but only bonds for Pennsylvania, Guam, Puerto Rico, certain U.S. territories are exempt for Pennsylvania. You can't have a California tax-exempt bond and have it tax-exempt for Pennsylvania. So you want to pay attention when you're gathering these documents to know what kind of income or information is being reported on these tax documents. Many years ago, I think the tax-exempt interest wasn't even being reported at all, like on any tax documents, and it was kind of like almost like an honesty system. So while we knew it wasn't taxable for federal, the custodians and trustees weren't reporting anything for the state. So Pennsylvania wouldn't have known whether you had it or not. Well, now that tax exempt information is getting reported. So if you have municipal bonds outside of the areas I mentioned, they would be taxable for Pennsylvania. Something to pay attention to. The other item you might have, and you have to be careful when you're entering this if you're self-preparing on your tax return, is U.S. government interest. Maybe you cash some savings bonds. You might have done it at the bank, or you might have done it through the Treasury, through the, there's another name for it, the Treasury, U.S. Treasury. There's another name, I think, on the 1099, just can't come to me right now, but the U.S. government interest is taxable for federal purposes, but it's not taxable for state purposes, for any state. So if you have cash savings bonds or have U.S. Treasury investments, that income, that interest income is not taxable at the state level. So it won't always be that your federal interest will match your state interest. There could be differences there. So just watch for those different boxes on the 1099 INT. On the 1099 DIV, DIV for dividends, you want to make sure you're paying attention to the first box is the total dividends, and they call those ordinary. So the total ordinary dividends. The next box says qualified dividends. Those qualified dividends are included in the ordinary. So if you have an ordinary dividend of $100 and the qualified dividends are $80, you don't report both. You report $100 of ordinary, and of that amount, $80 qualifies for a special tax rate. So qualified dividends, typically from positions that you have maybe in mutual funds or individual stocks, will qualify for a lower tax rate. And you want to make sure you enter that properly if you're self-preparing your tax return. What also gets reported on a 1099 DIV, D-I-V, are capital gain distributions. So if you have a mutual fund that you've invested in, it'll throw off some dividends, but it might also throw off capital gain distributions that are generated from that mutual fund manager buying and selling during the year. And then if they end up with gains at the end of the year, they pass those out to their shareholders, and that gets reported on your 1099 DIV as a capital gain distribution. So for federal purposes, that's important because that also qualifies for a special tax rate. So you want to make sure you're putting it in the right place on the tax return. For Pennsylvania purposes, it's counted as a dividend. So it gets reported a little differently for Pennsylvania. And you need to pay attention to that, because on the federal, you might have had capital losses that could offset those capital gain distributions that the mutual fund passed out. But for Pennsylvania purposes, you can't offset the capital gain distributions against other capital losses because it comes in on a different schedule on Pennsylvania. It comes in as a dividend. So these are the things you need to look at when you're looking at your tax documents. So I mentioned capital gain distributions. There's one other little box that might be important on your 1099 DIV. If you have invested in maybe equities or mutual funds that have foreign corporations, you might have paid some foreign dividends as well. Foreign tax on your foreign dividends. And those will get reported on that 1099 as well, so that if you had $100 of dividends and it was all from some Canadian company and you paid, you know, $20 in foreign tax, you actually could get a deduction for that foreign tax that you paid. All right, so we'll continue our discussion about the tax forms, understanding them, and getting ready for tax season. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about getting ready for tax season, or in particular for you, getting ready for your tax return. So hopefully some of the items you're going to hear tonight will help you get ready. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. And you can call in and ask questions live on air or off air. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann and she'll bring it into the studio and I'll do my best to answer it. It's funny, tonight I really didn't have time to get ready for the show, so I'm kind of going almost off the top of my head. So I was worried that I wouldn't be able to fill an hour, and now I'm afraid I'm only going to get a very small part of the topic I wanted to cover done, because I'm talking fairly fast and still have so much more to say. So for new listeners, just so you know, typically during tax season, we will devote many more shows to tax topics and we'll drill down into specific areas of the tax return and take calls throughout tax season for folks who have questions. So just so you know, this is just kind of an overview tonight of getting ready for your tax return. So we're talking about some of the forms and all the important information that you can get off of those tax forms to help you prepare your tax return and make sure you're getting all the deductions that are available to you or the proper tax reporting so you're doing everything right and to avoid notices. One of the areas where I see people get notices quite often, not my clients, but where I see people get notices is, you know, they get a letter from the IRS saying you owe $12,000. And, you know, they come and they say, oh, the IRS sent me a letter saying I owe $12,000. And I'm so upset. I've had some people who write the check to the IRS before, you know, doing further research. And when I look at the notice, what the notice will say is, you know, you did not report $100,000 of sales on, you know, this brokerage account. And so the IRS says $100,000 sale proceeds, zero cost basis. They increase your income by $100,000 and then they, you know, send you a tax bill. So what you have to make sure is that when you get these tax documents that I mentioned that say important tax information enclosed, that you address every one of them. And even if you think there's a reason you shouldn't have to report it, you better document why you don't have to report it or figure it out. So in the case that where this person came to me, yes, they had sold $100,000 worth of like mutual funds, whatever it was, I don't remember, it's been a while. They said they had a loss on it. So they figured, why bother reporting it? So they had sold something for $100,000, but their cost basis on it was $114,000. So they knew they had a $14,000 loss, and they just didn't want to bother reporting it on the tax return. Well, the IRS doesn't know what your cost basis is necessarily. More and more of the brokerage firms are tracking your cost basis because they're required to now by law, depending on what year it was you bought something. But pre-2012, I think it is, they didn't necessarily have to track the cost basis or report it to the IRS. So they may have it in their system, but it doesn't mean it was reported to the IRS. So don't assume the IRS knows what your cost basis is. They may not. Sometimes they may, sometimes they won't. So you want to make sure that you, if you get a 1099B as in boy, it's B for brokerage. If you get a 1099B, make sure you're reporting the sale information on your tax return with the proper cost basis so that you're not going to get a notice from the IRS. There's also form 1099 MISC. That's MISC. That's miscellaneous. If you get a form 1099 MISC, that is income that's getting reported to the IRS, and the IRS is probably going to assume it's self-employment income subject to self-employment tax. What is self-employment tax? That's basically Social Security tax. And when you're self-employed, you have to pay both the employer side and the employee side of that. And that tax together is 15.6%. So if you got a 1099 miscellaneous for something that really wasn't self-employment income, you better make sure that you document that it's not subject to self-employment tax and know that it's not subject to self-employment tax. So occasionally you'll see prizes. The value of a prize might be reported on a 1099 MISC. So make sure you're reporting it on the proper line. Typically that's like line 22 or line 20 toward the bottom of the first section of the page one tax return. So make sure when you get a 1099 MISC that you know what it is, what kind of income, what was it for, is it self-employment income or is it not? And for folks who are executors or trustees, so you become an executor for maybe an uncle, an aunt, a sister, a brother, a mom, or a dad, sometimes you waive your executor commission. And if you waive it, you weren't paid anything. You don't have to report anything. But if you are an executor or a trustee who actually takes a commission, that's going to be income taxable to you. But you may not receive a 1099 for that. Again, just because you don't receive a 1099 does not mean you don't have to report that income. So I'll give you an example. If you're a trustee for, you know, Uncle Fred, and you took a trustee commission because it was such hard work, and your trustee commission is $20,000, you probably won't get a 1099 for that, but you are required to report that income on federal. And guess what? It's also subject to income tax for state and for local in Pennsylvania. So if you get income, make sure you're reporting it and know where to report it. Now, in the case of an executor or a trustee, because you're not in the business of being an executor or a trustee, you're just doing this kind of a, like a one-time thing. It's not something you hang your shingle out and tell everyone you're doing this as a business. You're just doing it as a family member or, you know, wrapping up an estate, it's not going to be subject to self-employment tax. So that is one nice little caveat for folks who are getting executor commissions or trustee commissions. If you're not in the business for that, then it is not going to be subject to self-employment tax. And it gets reported as other income on page one of your federal return and also as income on your state and local return. So you might be someone who's retired and not filing local returns for a long time. Well, this might be a case where you would have to gear up and do a local return again. There's also a form 1099-R. R, just think retirement. So 1099-R is typically pension payments, IRA distributions, 401k distributions, and there's lots of information on the 1099-R as well that I will go into when we come back out of the break. And then we will talk about some of the non-tax form information that you need to pay attention to. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we'll take questions live on air or off air. You can give your question to Judy Ann and she'll bring it into the studio. And I will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
And thank you, John. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and we are talking about getting ready for tax season and some different things that you can do to get ready. We did have a call come in, Albert from Akunji. Thank you for calling, Albert. I appreciate it. And you asked, what is the limit on contributions to a Roth this year? And then you also asked, what amounts are associated with last year versus this year based on April 15th deadline? Great question, Albert. What happens with contributions to a Roth IRA or to a traditional IRA, the IRS tells us that we have until April 15th of the year following our tax year to make that contribution, and we can deem it as being made in that prior year. That sounds complicated. Let me make it a little simpler. We're filing our 2014 tax return. We have until April 15th of 2015 to make a contribution into our Roth or a traditional IRA. If we qualify for it, we have until April 15th to do that, and we can tell the custodian or the firm that has that IRA, we can tell them to mark it down as 2014. Okay, and the amount that you can do in 2014, if you're under age 50, was $5,500. So for 2014, it was $5,500. If you're over age 50, you could do an extra $1,000. So that would be $6,500. And that is for an IRA, a traditional IRA, or a Roth IRA. But there are few other restrictions around that. And one of them is your page one income. So there's certain filing thresholds and phase out amounts. So let me see if I can find this quickly. So for a Roth IRA contribution, if you're married filing joint and your adjusted gross income, which is basically the page one total, if it's under $181,000, you can make that Roth IRA contribution. It doesn't matter if you work or have a job, you have to work, but it doesn't matter if you have a employer plan. Okay, so I could be working, I could be putting money in a 401k, and if I'm married, filing joint, and my income is less than $181,000, I could put in $5,500 if I'm under age 50 and an extra $1,000 if I'm 50 or more. So that's $6,500. So I said I could, but I only can if I also have earned income of that amount. So that's another caveat. So if I had $181,000 of rental income and no wages or no business income, that's not going to work. I have to have earned income of that amount. So it's going to be the amount of earned income or those designated amounts, as I mentioned. So let's pretend I'm 50. Well, I am 50. I'm over 50. But let's, so I could do $6,500 for 2014. Let's say I'm married, and let's say my income's under $181,000. Then I could put in $6,500 because I make that much. Let's say I make $20,000 a year. I could actually put in $6,500 for myself and $6,500 for my spouse. And that could go into the Roth IRA. So your friend, Albert, if he wanted to put in excess of that amount, he may not be able to put that amount in his own Roth, but he could do it for himself and his spouse for 2014. Now, if he really wanted to put in $10,000 because he had the money today, in your example, there was $10,000 here, he could do, and let's say he's under 50, he could do $5,500 for 2014 and tell the custodian, here's $5,500, deem this 2014, and he has another $4,500 to do, he could tell them to mark that for 2015. Now, the amounts for 2015 went up. I'm pretty sure it went up to $6,000 for 2014, but I'm saying that number off the top of my head. So those contributions might have gone up, but you can tell your custodian which year to mark it for. And then you just want to make sure you track it properly in the tax return. There's a form 8606 that we use on tax filings for folks to track their contributions in their Roth. And let me tell you why this is super duper important. I love Roth IRAs. I love them because anybody who's eligible to do them, you can set aside money. You don't get a deduction today for that. It's after-tax money. So you don't get a deduction for that. But what happens is they grow income tax-free. And when you eventually make a qualified distribution of that money, all those earnings and growth and income, it's all tax-free as long as it's a qualified distribution, meaning after age 59 and a half, and it has to be in there for 5 years. So it's the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. Generally, I'd like people to hold on to those even longer if they can. But what's nice, Albert, especially for young folks, if they're a little nervous about putting money into a retirement account because they're worried they won't be able to get to it and they don't want to have penalties. The reason I like Roth, if you're eligible for it, is it's a way for you to save for retirement without being so nervous that you couldn't get that money back if you had to. Because the rules for a Roth IRA is that you can always take out your original contributions without a penalty. So even though I told you it's the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half, you can get to your original contribution, just don't take out any of the earnings. So if this is 15 years from now, how do I know what your original contributions are? Well, you track that on the Form 8606. So I've had folks who've come in who have not tracked it, did not have a Form 8606. They come to me, you know, 10, 15 years after they had done this so long ago, I'm just preparing their return for the first time. They tell me they took out, you know, $15,000 out of a Roth IRA. And I say, well, what were your original contributions to that? They say, I don't know. I don't have that. Well, you're not age 59 and a half. I don't want you to pay income tax on the earnings. I don't want you to have a 10% penalty for early withdrawal. I need to know what your cost basis is. So then we have to do a lot of digging and finding old statements and old tax returns and all kinds of crazy things to try to recreate what that cost basis is. So Albert, your probably simple question ended up with a whole lot of extra information, but I hope it's helpful. And again, that form is 8606. And if someone's eligible to do the Roth, that's great. Now, you or your friend might be single. So I want to just tell you the thresholds for single filers for the Roth IRA contribution. It's if your page one income, your adjusted gross income is under $114,000. Now, there is a little phase out. You can go a little higher than that, but there's a phase out and you have like a calculation for that. So if you were eligible to do $5,500, but maybe your income was just a little bit over that threshold, you might not be able to do the full $5,500. Okay, so that's all good information, important and very valuable. And when I said at the top of the show, if any of you folks have hung on since the top of the show, if you remember, I said, if you are someone who is getting a refund, you want to get your tax return done early because you want your refund, but you also may be able to use that refund for something that will further help you on your tax return. And what I meant by that was, you might be someone who'd have a refund and you didn't have a retirement account, maybe you don't have a 401k, and you would really, if you had money, you might want to put some money into an IRA or a Roth IRA. Well, if you found out you have a refund, you might say, gosh, maybe I will put money into one of those retirement accounts Lori was talking about. Well, if you did a traditional IRA, it would further lower your income on page one, which would lower your taxable income. So if you did a traditional IRA, that could be a deduction on the tax return and give you some extra tax benefits. And if your income is really much more modest, maybe you're just kind of starting out, you're 24-year-old and 25-year-old, and you're just kind of working, you're making, you know, $15,000 a year, There are incentives to you to put money into a retirement account. It's called a retirement savers credit. So the fun thing is when you really start paying attention to your tax return and your tax documents and all that is available to you, you might even further help your help yourself by saving in a retirement account. That retirement savers credit is even available if, again, within certain income thresholds, modest income thresholds, you could still get a retirement savers credit perhaps for 401k contributions, Roth contributions, or traditional IRA contributions. There are so many things out there, folks. I can't cover them all in this show. It's all about awareness and paying attention and engaging in your financial life so that you can make better financial decisions for yourself. And, you know, it's almost sometimes even what you've been doing, but just a little bit better, a little bit, amp it up a little bit, jump the curve, we say. So watch for those things. One other caveat I want to mention about the Roth IRA or traditional IRA, you know, there are some other limitations. It's not just your adjusted gross income. It's also whether you're have an employer plan. So that could be another whole show just talking about retirement accounts. And I'm sure I've done shows on that. Podcasts are available on the website, yourfinancialchoices.com or through wdiy.org. If you're interested in learning more about retirement accounts, there might be some information there that would help you kind of put this all together. But as we go through tax season, I will also dedicate a show to just retirement planning and saving. So we talked a little bit about the 1099-R before the break, and I want to finish that up. But let me give you the phone number one more time, and that is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. If you have questions, you can call in and talk live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. Judy Ann's in the studio and can take your call. So the 1099-R, I said the easy way to remember the R is retirement, and it could be a pension, 401k, distribution, annuity, could be a rollover of an IRA, a rollover of 401k. So there's going to be different codes on that 1099-R, and there are certain codes that could trigger penalties. So for example, if there's a code 1 on a 1099-R, which and would be, let's say, a distribution from an IRA, it would say early withdrawal penalty could apply. So sometimes you want to make sure that the code on the 1099-R matches up with what really happened or what you expected. So on a pension, a code 7 is normal distribution, and that's normal, and it wouldn't be taxable for Pennsylvania. I think that's the one that I'm thinking was the code 1, so I apologize. I said 1 on the IRA distribution. So code 1 on the 1099-R for a pension might say early, no known exception applies, because, you know, you're not supposed to take money out of a pension when you're, you know, 45 or something. So you want to watch for those codes that may trigger penalties. So pay attention to that. A code G indicates a rollover from a custodian of an IRA or a 401k. So you've rolled over the amounts. They're not going to be income taxable. But what you want to watch for on there is, do your numbers match up to what you actually rolled over? There's another form that comes out called a 5498. It's not really an income tax form. It's more of an informational reporting form. But that 5498 tells the IRS what your IRA balances are. So sometimes you want to watch to see what it says on there. Does it say that you did a Roth conversion? Does it say that you contributed to an IRA? There's some extra information on there that could be helpful when you're trying to trace these 1099-Rs. Okay, so lots of tax information, and I'm going to have a little bit of time left when we come back from this next break to talk about some of the non-tax forms that you could start getting organized right now so that you're ready to hit the ground running once all your tax documents come in. So we're going to talk about how to get yourself organized in those other areas. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And it's time to take a look at the weather. Lori, are you ready for a little bit of snow?
I'm seeing it accumulate as we talk.
Looking right out the window of our studios here in eclectic South Bethlehem. A gentle snow is falling. We have 30 degrees right now, going down to a low of 23 tonight. But new snow accumulation, less than 1 inch. So
okay, not bad.
Not to be nervous, right? Tomorrow, Thursday, a 20% chance of snow showers before 9 a.m. Cloudy, then gradually becoming mostly sunny with a high near 38. For Thursday night, a low around 19. Friday, mostly sunny, high near 34. Friday night, a 50% chance of snow with the low around 27. That same 50% chance of snow on Saturday before 1 p.m. Snow could be heavy at times. Cloudy with a high near 35. Saturday night, a 30% chance of snow, low around 25 degrees, and then the snow moves out, and for Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 34 degrees. It's 14 minutes before 7 o'clock, and once again, Lori Siebert and your financial choices.
Thank you, John. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're coming up on the last quarter of the show. And it's gone very fast for me, so I don't know how it's gone for you listening, and I hope I've not spoken so fast that you're not comprehending what I'm saying, because I certainly want to give you enough information to kind of empower you in preparing your tax return and not be nervous about it. So you watch for those tax documents to come in on those envelopes marked important tax information enclosed, and you look at what all those codes mean, and they're typically defined on the back of that document, whether it's a W-2 or a 1099. So you want to make sure you understand what those codes mean, especially if you're self-preparing. I know for folks who use paid preparers, you take that stress out of your life and you kind of hand it over, and that's fine as long as your tax preparer also understands what those codes mean. But it's kind of always good to know, especially when you're self-preparing. All right, so let's talk a little bit about some of the items that you have to pay attention to that are not reported to you on tax documents, things like your charitable deductions, your real estate taxes, your mortgage interest. Your mortgage interest is reported on a tax document, and the IRS does match up to that. So you'll get a 1098 for your mortgage interest. But things like your real estate taxes and your charitable contributions, maybe your investment management fees, if you're paying someone to help manage your assets, your tax preparation fees, if you pay someone to prepare your tax return, home office, you might have a home office, you might have employee business expenses that were not reimbursed. So some of these are miscellaneous itemized deductions. You may or may not get a benefit of them. These other expenses I mentioned, the real estate taxes and charitable contributions, those are also itemized deductions. So you also need to know if your standard deduction is higher than your itemized deduction or vice versa. And don't assume because you couldn't itemize in past years that you wouldn't be able to itemize in a current year. You always should kind of review your situation each year, because one year you might not have been eligible and the current year you might. Also, change of marital status sometimes affects whether you can itemize or not. So you want to pay attention to that. If maybe a spouse died and you're a single filer now, all of a sudden your charitable contributions might put you over the standard deduction that would apply to a single person. We had another call come in from Carol in Bethlehem. She said, in the past, my husband and I have given to charity some of our required minimum distribution. Is there an opportunity to use some of their money from the required minimum distribution of their IRAs in 2015 given directly to charity? Carol, this is a great question. And unfortunately, it's very confusing because every other year, it seems, they change the rule on this. So let me give a brief description of what you're talking about. For people who are over age 70 and a half and are required to take a minimum distribution from their IRA. What we have had in the past here and there has been something called a qualified charitable distribution, which is an opportunity to take money out of your IRA and give it directly to a charity, such that that money that you've given to the charity out of your IRA will not be reported on page one of your return. It also means you won't get the deduction on Schedule A. Well, it's still a great deal for people who don't itemize, because you're getting really an income deduction on page one if you're not someone who itemizes. So what we've seen is a lot of people, in order to reduce the page one income, who are charitably inclined, have been taking money out of their required minimum distribution. You actually could do more than the required distribution. You could do up to $100,000. Well, here's the part that when I said here and there and here and there, they go back and forth whether they allow this or they don't. And in fact, in 2012, they decided to allow it. I think it was for 2012 in January of 2013. It's a little late to allow something for a prior year after that year is gone. And what happened in 2014 is they did not have the qualified charitable distribution available until I think it was like December 14th. So Carol, what I had been telling folks to do was to not take their minimum required distribution for the whole, you know, year. I said, wait, let's wait till December. And wouldn't you know, they changed the law in December. So for folks who waited, they were making those distributions directly to the charity out of their IRA in the last 2 weeks of December. So if you missed that window, for any distributions, required minimum distributions you did in 2014, you've missed the opportunity. They didn't put in a fix. I was hoping they would put in a fix for that, and they didn't. So if you took your required minimum distribution in June thinking there was no longer a qualified charitable distribution option, then you just missed out. For folks who waited till the end of the year, they would get the advantage of that. That rule was extended for 2014 only. It was not extended for 2015. So, Carol, at this point for 2015, we do not know if that is going to be available. So I would say to you, if you are someone who's charitably inclined and you do nice big distributions, you could just wait until maybe the tax law gets extended. Could be later in the year. It could be December 15th. It could be next year. But you want to watch and see. So if you want to use your required minimum distribution in lieu of you taking the check, giving it to a charity, you might want to just hang on and hold that option open toward the end of the year when they may extend that tax break again, because they have done that, you know, here and there. Long explanation, Carol, but I hope that for folks who were not familiar with it, that they do pay attention. Again, that's available for people who are age 70 and a half or older and subject to required minimum distributions. Carol, I want to mention one other thing, though. I did have some people who actually, earlier in the year, had the check written directly to the charity from their required minimum distribution. So that is one workaround that seemed to work, where they had the check written directly to the charity. If this law had not been extended, they would have reported that whole amount on their tax return as just a regular required minimum distribution. All right, but because the law was extended, they're not going to have to report that amount on page one. Okay, hope you understood that. Now, some of the other items that we talk about that you could get ready for tax season so that when your tax forms come in, you're all ready to go. You want to make sure you have your Schedule A items, those charitable contributions, your receipts for those charitable contributions. You can't make up charitable contributions. You need documentation to prove that donation and that deduction. Same thing with all your business deductions, your home office deductions. You want documentation for everything. For folks who have made contributions to 529 accounts, that's education accounts, if you're a Pennsylvania resident, it's a deduction in Pennsylvania on your tax return on page one. So you want to make sure if you've made contributions, whether you're a grandparent doing it for a grandchild, whether you're a grandparent putting it into a 529 that your child is the owner of, if you're making the contribution, you get the deduction. Estimated tax payments. Make sure you made your estimated tax payments if you're someone who does make those. And make a list. When did you make them? How much did you make? And what was the date you made them? Dates are important, especially for the fourth quarter. A lot of people make their fourth quarter estimated tax payment in December. So you want to know that because that will affect your deductions on your Schedule A for itemizing. You want to pay attention to changes that you've gone through. Have you had a marital status change? Have you had children? Have you changed jobs? Get all that ready and organized. Real quick, I wanted to talk about filing your return. Paper filing is like gone by the wayside, but some people might still fill out a paper return. Good luck with that. There's also electronically filed returns that you can do yourself. You can purchase software in the store. There's also online software through the IRS website. A lot of people are eligible for free file. And their issue there is they'll have like 14 different software products that you can choose from. So if you want to put yourself through that for free filing, that's up to you. And typically, it's if you earned $60,000 or less last year, you're eligible to choose from among 14 different software products. I think if you make more than that, there's some other eligibility requirements. So you'd have to go through that. But that's on the IRS's website. Just go to irs.gov and /free file for information on free filing. I think typically they kind of have to be fairly straightforward tax returns, not as complicated. And I also, in the past, I think you had to pay for like the state filing. So you just want to coordinate that with whatever your situation is. Some people prefer to use a paid tax preparer. That's fine too. My suggestion there is that you get yourself so organized and have all your papers in order that it makes the time that the preparer has to work on the return to the minimum, that they can spend their time not organizing your paper and opening your envelopes, but they can spend their time really looking at some good tax planning for you and making sure they have good, accurate numbers. So don't pay someone to open your envelopes and unfold your papers and add up 20 million charitable contribution receipts. You know, organize yourself. It really makes it much easier for you, easier for the preparer, and they can spend their time on really adding value to the process rather than organizing. So that's a suggestion for more accurate and tax efficient and cheaper tax preparation when you're paying someone to help you with that. Typically, paid preparers are going to be required to file electronically, so you need to get your arms around that. It's quite convenient, and the IRS loves it and wants it that way, and it probably is more accurate than filing paper returns. All right. So as we go through tax season, just to wind up the show here, we're going to talk about different parts of the tax return. We're going to have a lot of shows on tax preparation. The next couple weeks, we're not going to be talking about tax returns. Next week, I have attorney Gladys Wiles, who's going to join us. It'll be her first time on the show. She's just a great gal, and I'm really looking forward to it. And we're going to discuss legal issues around four different pieces of your life that could be affected. So we're going to talk about legal issues around real estate, personal injury, business law, and estate planning. And we're going to give some high level, you know, things to watch out for from a legal standpoint. And then the next week, I'm going to have Judy Harris on, an attorney, to talk about the new power of attorney rules that have just come out from Pennsylvania, and it'll be important for you to kind of know what's on the landscape for that and whether it'll apply for you and whether you should go get your documents updated. So I'm going to have a great couple of weeks. These both are great attorneys. We're going to talk about some of these issues the next 2 weeks, and then we're going to have lots more shows. If you have ideas or suggestions or topics you want me to cover, you can send those to us through yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm happy to entertain those and do the best we can to help educate our listeners in the Lehigh Valley. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. And remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a wonderful week and drive carefully out there.
That's right, Lori, and congratulations on another interesting show.
Thank you, John.
Thanks. We'll see you next Wednesday.
Okay.
The time is 7 o'clock. This is WDIY Allentown and WDIY.org. Yes, we are the Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music.